Keeping busy?
Yeah. Very this week because I'm doing the whole move thing by myself while my wife's in Cleveland and Pittsburgh.
Ah, so. Convenient.
This is the Citadel Cafe.
This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 70, recorded live Wednesday, June 19th, 2013. I am Joel Duggan, and joining me this week, I've got Game of Thrones still in the brain. Joining us this week, Mr. Bill Meeks of Meeks Mixed Media and the podcast Greetings from Storybrooke. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you. It's been what, 20 episodes?
57 was the last one you did.
Okay, 57 was the last one.
23, you were close.
Okay. I think I was on 52, wasn't I? Because I saw that this was 70. I was like, maybe just likes having me on for round numbers. I think I was on 50.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I could have had the doc incorrect. I don't know. Because I've been booking extra guests now that Chad has departed with his little one. I've been booking different guests, so I've got a great big doc, but I had to shuffle things around because we missed a week and I might have mistyped the episode. But I know you were on 57. Whether or not you were also on 50, that could have also been the case.
Yeah. Maybe you're let's just pretend I was.
Yeah. Well, you're rounding the bases, right? You're on third, so the home stretch. We'll have you back for 90, maybe.
99, I think would be appropriate.
99. Okay.
99.
You are penciled in, sir. If you are new to the Citadel Cafe, dear listener, this is where myself and usually a couple of friends come to hang out and talk about the cool stuff that we are into. Usually movies, apps, websites, books, comic books, that kind of stuff. We're in sci-fi fantasy stuff, but we're not myopic. We'll talk about just about anything we think is cool. Usually Peyton Francis is here, Grand Poobah at CardboardTreehouse.com, but he's traveling this week for work, so he was unable to make it. He also hasn't seen what is going to be a big chunk of our show later on this week, and that is The Man of Steel. Both Bill and I have seen it, and we are going to talk about it, and we thought that there's just no real way to talk about it the way that we want without spoiling it. So we are going to stick the Man of Steel chat at the end of the show. There will be a great big red flag before we start talking about it. Yes, big cape. We'll wave the red cape before we start talking about it so we don't spoil anything for you. At the end of the show, Bill and I will talk about Man of Steel. And very much looking forward to it, I think, because both Bill and I are big Superman fans. So that's it. That's all for the nitty-gritty off at the top of the show. So,
the preamble.
So, I mean, Bill, I mentioned, you know, Meeks Mixed Media and all that kind of stuff at the top. Mm-hmm. How are things? Like, is the media still mixing? Where can people find out what you're doing?
The media is still mixing. A lot of it's behind the scenes right now, and I'm kind of transitioning it from being, you know, my livelihood to, you know, doing the stuff I want. Like, it doesn't necessarily have to turn a profit. So it's a little slow there right now. Just updated the website if you want to check it out. It's meeksmixedmedia.com. But I'd say probably about midsummer after I recover from this move, there'll be a lot more activity from there. And greetings from Storybrooke is going good. It's a little on hiatus right now because, you know, the show's not on. But we're going to, once Anne-Marie gets back from her travels, we're going to be doing some commentary episodes and some stuff about the Once Upon a Time novel and graphic novel and everything. So that should be fun.
Oh, cool. So the Once Upon a Time has like a graphic novel. Is it like an in-between? Does it like continue the story when the television's off season?
It's kind of like in the show, it's a flashback kind of telling how the Evil Queen and the Woodsman got together romantically back in fairy tale land. It's being put out by Marvel, which, you know, Marvel is owned by Disney and ABC is owned by Disney. So corporate synergy and all that.
Yeah. Well, you know, the extended seasons of things like Smallville and Buffy in graphic novel form have been pretty popular. So, I mean, I would like that. I think I would enjoy having a graphic novel to read in the summer you know, when the television show isn't on, that's still related to the show, not necessarily like must read, you know, kind of information, and then come back to the show in the fall when the weather's shit again and you're more than happy to be inside and watching television.
Oh, yeah, definitely. A fun little one-shot story to kind of whet the appetite for the new season.
Cool. Yeah, I might have checked that out. I confess, I still haven't caught up on Once Upon a Time. So it's just, I think I got the first season finished. I'm not even sure if I got that far. But I can tell you one thing that I have been watching, though, is Mad Men. And this is my second time through. I'm not up to date. But Jocelyn had never seen it, and it's on Netflix, and there's quite a lot of it on Netflix. I think about 5 seasons here in Canada. So she was starting to go through and watch that. And I decided, you know, it's been so long, and I like the show so much that I thought I would sit in on it. And I completely forgot what a sharp, stylistic show that is. Like, it's just, they really nailed like the 60s and like that, the whole kind of vibe of that era really comes through in that show, and I really, really like it. And I don't know, there's a couple things that stuck out to me, especially now because, of course, I get Jocelyn's 2 cents as she's watching it, and she has a really hard time getting, like, latching on to any character, you know, like no one is really nice in that show.
Oh, no, I will preface this with, I have only seen the first season, but you're completely right. There's not really a likable person on the show.
I mean, Dawn is kind of like the James Bond-esque, you know, kind of, not anti-hero, but he's the main character, and you're supposed to at least, you know, like him a little bit, and you do for a little bit at first, but he just does some things that are just not nice. You know, and you can't really get behind him and say, well, he's my favorite character, because he's not, you know, because I mean, not like it's a huge spoiler, but like everybody in the show is like cheating on their spouse and, you know, or doing, you know, horrible business deals and all this kind of stuff. And I find it very off-putting. It was different. It was funny because it was different when I was watching it when I was single compared to when I'm watching it now, where Jocelyn and I have been together for, I don't know, over a year now. So, you know, well over a year. So, and we're living together. So, I mean, it has that different vibe when you're watching it as a couple, you know, and watching people cheat on one another and all that kind of stuff. You're like, that's just not nice. You know, like it brings up those emotions to the forefront, and you just, you know, it kind of gets your back up a bit.
When you're single, you'd be more like, oh, you know what, that might not be such a bad lifestyle.
I don't know about that, but it certainly it doesn't dig into you. Like it doesn't have the same, you know, stabbing, searing pain, you know, that it does when you're together with someone, I think.
Yeah, because you just can't even imagine that.
Yeah. No.
Exactly. Also, we do have to point out that everybody on the show is an alcoholic chain smoker.
Oh my God, they smoke so much.
And also a sharp dresser.
That's the thing I do like about the show. That's something that will keep me watching pretty much no matter what, and that is the visual style, the cinematography, and the set decoration, and the I want to say costume design, I guess, is the technical thing. I guess historical to costume design. The men in like the slim cut suits and the skinny ties and stuff like that. It's funny how nowadays it's kind of hipster-esque, I guess. And it doesn't really work with like big mops of hair and some of the kind of mix mash of fashion that I see around Halifax. But, you know, when everybody's hair is combed, you know, clean shaven with, you know, the slim cut suit and the bigger collars and the cufflinks and stuff. Like it's a very, very sharp show in terms of the fashion. And I'm sure that some people that are really into that, I know several female friends of mine really enjoy the women's fashions, especially the character Joan, that is one of the main characters in The Office. She always has these really crazy bright red or bright blue dresses and stuff that's very, I wouldn't say gaudy by today's standards, but bold by today's standards.
Yeah. Can you imagine, though, back then having to get up every day and putting on a really thick, hot suit and going all these places where there's, you know, limited or no air conditioning because we don't have the air conditioning technology we have now, like on a 90-degree day.
Oh.
Oh, it'd be awful.
In New York, like New York City. Mm-hmm. Like Oh, the humidity there would be insane. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine it, because I mean, like my apartment here gets really quite warm. Jocelyn and I actually just invested in a air conditioner for the summer, and it is a godsend. And our thermostat is not exactly accurate in this place, so we don't really trust it. We just gonna go by comfort. But this this air conditioner here has a thermostat in it, so it knows what the room temperature is. And I'm looking at it right now, and in my studio it is 29 degrees indoors. I'm not sure what that means there's buttons. Just let me check. That's 83 for all you Americans.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Indoors.
Now I get it. Now I get it.
Yeah. So that is comfortable for right now, but ask me again in about 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And that's working all day in that kind of heat. And of course it's you know, quarter after nine in the evening for me. So in the afternoon, it gets up like 32, 35 in here. So to have this air conditioner keeping it at around 24 is just amazing.
Oh yeah. Amazing. Well, like I think I might've mentioned it while we were recording, but we just moved. Hmm. And for the past 2.5 years, my office has been out in our garage, which, you know, I had it set up really nice, had a whole like little video studio and everything, but there was no air conditioning or heat out there. So I'd freeze in the summer and it would be like 104 degrees out there or in the summer, and then I'd freeze in the winter. I'm getting used to being in the air conditioned office. I think I tweeted the other day, it's weird how much faster the days go when you're not dealing with heat exhaustion.
Yeah, no, I agree. I used to have to take a lot of breaks and stuff like that, and it's nice to be able to get some stuff done. So what do you have yourself set up in the new space? Have you been watching anything, or most of your time been going to the move?
Most of it's been going to the move and Man of Steel, of course. But I actually just yesterday got access into a beta for a service called Aereo, which might be of interest to some people. Basically, what it is, and it's good for cord cutters like me. It gives you your own antenna and a little server farm.
Oh, cool.
That basically, you know, picks up all the over-the-air channels. And they also give you, right now I have like a 20-hour DVR. So I can just go to the website, set stuff up to record, and, pull it up on my iPhone, pull it up on the boxy box upstairs, pull it up on any computer I'm at. I think you can have up to five devices. But they just opened it up here in Atlanta, and it works great. Like the video quality is very clear. You're getting full HD out of it and everything.
Oh, wow.
But they're opening it up to more areas. They just, like I said, they started the Atlanta beta this week, and I think someplace in South Carolina too. But really good, and they're going to give me like 3 free months for doing the beta. But I think it's only like $6 or $7 a month, something like that.
So something comparable to Netflix.
Yeah. Yeah. And that way, what we have been using is, you know, they can encrypt the over-the-air channels over the cable. So we've kind of been, you know, just plugging in if we need to watch something on network TV.
Mm-hmm.
With this, I think we're just going to start using this because, you know, free DVR, you know?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm looking at their supported devices link here on their website, and the first thing they list is pretty much any browser that you'd want to use.
Oh, yeah.
And then they iPad, iPhone with iOS 4 or better, and then also Apple TV and Roku. The Apple TV would be via AirPlay from a compatible device, but I mean, that covers a lot of the bases, you know, as far as, you know, like if you don't happen to have an iPhone or iPad, like you can still use your desktop computer.
Yeah, and I mean, devices that aren't listed there as officially supported, I've gotten to work like the boxy box upstairs and then my Nexus 7. Nexus 7, I did have to download an older version of Flash for Android since they discontinued it.
Mm-hmm.
But once I did that, it worked fine, and it works fine on the boxy box, which has also an older version of Flash, but luckily it's compatible with Aereo. But yeah, they pretty much support everything, which is great.
So they send you an antenna? Like you purchase the antenna from them?
Well, no, they don't send it to you. They just, they have a big server farm. One side's antennas, one side's, servers to send out the signal with the DVR and everything. And, it just runs out of their server farm. You rent the antenna as a King Gargoyle Dave. said in the chat room there.
Did these guys start in New York?
Yeah, they started in New York.
Oh, I have heard about this before. I just didn't realize. Did they change their name at all? Maybe I just wasn't paying attention to how it was spelled.
No, I don't think they changed the name. And as I believe Molly TCC fan in the chat room said, they talked about it on Framerate a lot as that was going on, and there were some court battles over it and everything.
Right,
so you
I
might
do
have
remember
heard
that
about it from there.
Yeah, that's precisely where I heard about it. Yeah. No, this is really cool. Now, is this only for U.S. or is this in Canada as well?
As far as I know, it's only U.S. right now, but they seem to be doing pretty good business, and you know they're expanding markets all the time now. So,
wow.
Yeah, hopefully maybe it'll come to Canada shortly.
Well, I'll amend my register now or pre-register now email to them with please bring it to Canada, because that's something that I would definitely take part in.
Oh yeah, good stuff, and you know, great for cord cutters, because that local TV thing is one of the few things that if you don't have good reception with an antenna or something, you're pretty much out of luck.
Yeah.
So it's a really good option for that.
Yeah, I mean, I actually I have cable plugged into my television, but I don't officially get cable. The built-in digital tuner in my television will just decode the odd channel here and there. But normally, when you don't have cable in Canada, you get your local ATV, which is like your local news and extension of CTV nationwide, but also CBC. Like everybody and their dog can get CBC in Canada, except for me, because for whatever reason, the antenna/signal with my location just doesn't come through. I haven't looked into any kind of digital antennas or doing things like that, and I probably should, because I mean sometimes there's some hockey games on CBC, and I mean I'd watch CBC Evening News because it tends to be for us anyways in Canada, it tends to be local focused because it's regional, so it would be CBC News Nova Scotia and then the national would follow after that, so at least you'd get the whole news hour wouldn't be filled with like what's happening in BC and Toronto, because I wouldn't necessarily care.
Yeah
so right on. That's really cool. I'll have to look into this a little bit more after the show and see if they have any news on like possible release dates in Canada, because I remember I've recently picked up Square as a point of purchase for when I'm at cons and other places where you don't necessarily have ready access to credit card or Interact payments. Square was not available in Canada for a little while when they first released, but quite quickly after their success rate in the U.S. started to move, they released a Canadian client. So maybe if Aereo experiences some success in the States, they'll bring it to... they'll bring it to Canada. Now, unfortunately, I mean, copyright laws and broadcast laws in Canada are very different than the U.S., so there's probably some hoops they would have to jump through, but,
yeah.
I'm all for helping them leap.
You have to have 90% Canadian content or something?
That's for when you want to do like a funded show. Like if you were doing a kid's cartoon and you wanted to get like official government funding, then a good chunk of the content would have to be Canadian. It's not 90, but it's a lot. But you can really get past that. Like one of my favorite cartoons from a few years ago was Jacob Tutu. And it was a fun flash animated cartoon, really well drawn in terms of the designs and very, very funny for today's standards. It was actually a very well done cartoon, but they set it in Montreal. So right away, that covers a huge chunk of your Canadian content, because the city, that's mentioned all the time in different locations in the city and all that kind of stuff, it's all already included in the scripts for the show, so including extra Canadian content really wasn't that bit of a stretch, so that was smart. I don't know about the only other thing that we have up here is for television that I know from working in animation is that you'll get like a subcontract, so like Warner Brothers will send a show to be like animated or part of it will be done here in Canada, and then it's just a matter of provincial or Canadian funding, and that just depends on how long your workers have been in the country and whether your artists are staying in the province or in the country for extended a period of time, etc., and that will determine how much of your I think there's like a tax rebate or something like that, so there's actually quite a few programs here for smaller studios to be able to stay competitive, which I think is pretty cool. But one of the things that I've been catching on Netflix, I always mean to, but I never watch the documentaries that I bookmark. Like I go through and I put a whole bunch of stuff on the, what is it? Not the quick list. What's it called? The
queue? Instant queue.
Instant queue, yeah. And one time I actually did follow through and I watched Conan O'Brien Can't Stop. And this is a documentary that follows the comedy tour that Conan went on after he was let go from The Tonight Show, which was, of course, a huge shitstorm all over the internet and news and everything else with how that went down. And it is a really unique film. It's you know, you get to travel with him. It's on the plane. It's in the hotel. It's behind, you know, backstage, all that kind of stuff. And you get a really cool window into the amount of work that goes into not just his stuff, but any stuff. Like, I mean, behind, you can imagine like Jimmy Fallon, Jay Leno, Letterman, like all of the work that goes into these shows and stuff like that behind the scenes is just immense. And then takes it on the road. Like he turns it into a traveling vaudeville music concert thing. And it's just insane. And I don't like there. It takes a little while to kind of get used to his brand of humor when he's not actually on camera because he's kind of an ass.
Yeah, he comes off as a bit of a jerk in the movie, but then as the movie goes on and you get more context into where he is mentally, and you take into account everything that was going on around him at the time, it's a little more understandable.
Yeah, absolutely. And he takes the time to give a proper compliment. Like he's not always sarcastic and he's not always kind of tongue in cheek and getting people to do weird stuff just to kind of exercise his power as a celebrity or whatever. The opening scene in the movie is hilarious. I mean, like he's driving behind this van of tourists in LA, I guess, Hollywood. And this van is driving around a neighborhood and he's like, what do these people expect to see? Like Brad Pitt taking out his garbage? Like, that's ridiculous. And so then he drives up next to the van, sticks his head out the window and goes, "Hi, it's me. I'm Conan O'Brien." And then he drives away, you know, just figured I'd make their $20 worth their while. Right. And it's funny the comments that he has about, you know, the fan culture and the celebrity culture and that kind of stuff. But he also takes some time to compliment his, personal assistant and some of the other things and other people that help him pull off this comedy tour. Cause I mean, it is a crazy amount of work.
Definitely.
Yeah. And that's the other thing is that even though he's a bit of a, he's really heavy on the sarcasm, but he is also really humble when it actually comes time to talk about the people that have supported him, whether it's people that are his writing team, his friends, or whether it's just complete and utter strangers that drive, you know, 600 miles on a motorbike just to see him in person. He's very humbled by that kind of stuff. And his work ethic will make you feel like a schmuck, like you don't do anything. You know, you think you've had a hard day at work until you see this guy and you're just like, okay, all right. I guess I can see why some celebrities deserve, you know, all the money and the attention they get because true to the movie's title, I mean, he just can't stop. It's endless for this guy. And I prefer him to many other late night talk shows that I've seen. Again, I don't have cable, so I don't watch them regularly, but I see clips on YouTube.
Have you been, so you haven't been keeping up with the TBS show too much or?
No, I haven't again, because I don't have the cable.
Yeah. I kept up with it for the first like 6 months or so, but then I kind of dropped off. I think I'm kind of like breaking away from being into the talk show format because it just seems so, you know, artificial, I guess.
Yeah.
And you know, there's more kind of real and raw not raw like necessarily like negative or whatever, but just raw kind of interviews and stuff online, you know, like a WTF or Nerdist or something like that. I'd rather get a nice 45-minute sit-down conversation with somebody then have them come out and say, "Hey, I have a movie. Here's a funny story about how we made it that I told last night on Leno."
Yeah, no, and I have seen that. Specifically, actually, I watched a British show. I can't remember the name of it right now, but he's pretty popular. It has a really kind of like a pink and red set with a big red couch.
Graham Norton?
That's it. Yeah, that's him. And he interviewed the cast of Man of Steel. So, I mean, I won't get into any spoiler details, but like the stories that Henry Cavill told and Amy Adams, Russell Crowe.
Amy Adams is Lois Lane.
So the three of them, they told the same stories that I've seen on some of the other shorter clips that I've watched online. So, yeah. I mean, everybody has their funny, you know, quip because I mean, in the actor's defense, they're on like, you know, an endless ream of press junkets and interviews and stuff like that. So, I mean, they've got to kind of have a few stories prepared. Otherwise, they're going to run out of stuff to say.
Well, I'm sure with a movie that big, too, they have a sit down with the marketing people at the studio and get their approved anecdotes to, you know, pull out on those shows, because you know the whole marketing campaign down to sitting down with people on talk shows and being interviewed is so planned and precise and everything that I'm sure they have to get approval.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, and I remember this I'll save it for later on. Okay. It's so hard to bite my tongue. But we can at least tease a little Superman, because in the reading section this week, you actually have a pick, and it's Superman related.
Yes, it is. It's called Superman: The High Flying History of America's Most Enduring Hero. I wrote Americans, by Larry Tye, and it came out last year. I hadn't heard of it, and then, you know, as we were leading up into Man of Steel a couple weeks ago, I was getting really excited. I ran across it on Audible. I downloaded it, and it's really, really good. As someone who's read probably a dozen books on the history of Superman, I think this might be the best one.
Wow.
Yeah, because what it does is the first third of it kind of goes down and walks through the entire history of the character as he related, you know, politically, socially to the society around him. And then you go back right from the beginning, and they walk you through, you know, the behind the scenes of every comic book version, every TV version, movie version, cartoon version, and, you know, all the behind the scenes workings and going on behind that. And, you know, I've seen elements of it in other Superman books, but I've never seen it quite put all together like this. And, you know, it's really hard to do this, but I actually learned some stuff from it that I didn't know about Superman.
Wow.
Yeah, so very high praise. I definitely really like it. I'm actually probably, after I'm done with it, I'm going to check out some more of Larry Tye's stuff, because really well-written nonfiction, too.
So. Oh, wow. Very cool. I mean, I'm a Superman... I'm not really a nerd, because that would imply that I know an awful lot about, like, the history of the character, and you certainly have me schooled. I don't think I've ever read a book on the history of Superman. I've just been a fan since I was five. So mm-hmm. I call that 30 years of experience as far as, you know, that realm is concerned. I mean, cause I grew up mm-hmm. with like the Reeves movies and stuff like that, but I've never actually, gone into something like this. The one nonfiction that I'm reading, I guess in chunks over the last little while, that has kind of the same sort of probably weight with a lot of people is, the latest Disney biography. I haven't picked it up in a while, but, I found that pretty well written for, you know, mm-hmm. basically just like a biography about somebody. Granted, he's an interesting guy, but it's, you know, it starts at very, very early age, and it's mm-hmm. you would think it would be hard to slug through all the stuff that gets to the eventual, you know, start of, you know, Walt Disney Pictures and stuff like that. But it was actually pretty, pretty interesting to hear about. But this is really cool. And it's not really expensive. It's only like $18 on Amazon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really good too. The Disney, I read I'm trying to remember the name of it. I think it was called maybe The Man Behind the Mouse, a really good Disney biography a couple years ago. And it you know, walked through like that too. Mm-hmm. Just thought I'd mention it. But I also, we have a shared love for Walt Disney, I guess, because, you know, he's one of my role models.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, as far as, you know, mm-hmm. Entrepreneurship like just... arts and passion for the arts and support of the arts and all that kind of stuff. I've always looked up to him.
Even down to workflow, like something that he called plussing, I've made a core tenet of what I do or how I do what I do, which is, you know, get it as good as you possibly can, walk away from it, then come back and make it better.
Yeah.
You know, every time you have a number in your head, you know, I want to plus 10 things on this, you know, make that shading a little nicer or add a little like sparkle here, you know, just stuff to go in and make it better. Because that's what they did with all of their movies. They'd make the whole movie, or they'd have the whole movie planned out, and then they'd go back in and read and, you know, go in and tweak stuff and then tweak scenes and just make it better and better and better.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I looked it up here. Walt Disney, The Triumph of American Imagination is the one that I was reading. It's by Neil Gabler, I think. And it's really quite good. And I know a couple of other friends have read it via audiobook, and they've enjoyed it because it is big. That's one of the reasons why I haven't been reading it as much, because it's not convenient to carry around. Uh-huh. I've actually been thinking about buying a digital copy for the iPad just so I can, you know, have it in more than one place.
Just have it wherever you need.
Yeah. So before we move on here, I do have one question for you. Did you know that one of the creators of Superman is related to Canada?
Yes, I did.
Hmm.
Shuster, isn't it?
Joe Shuster, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's actually a comics award here in Canada called the Joe Shuster Award.
Oh, nice.
They give it to, outstanding work in comics. I think it's once a year. But one of the things that I grew up watching were these little heritage minutes from CBC, and they would cover different points of American history and Canadian history as they collided, mostly Canadian stuff, even one here local to Halifax with the Halifax explosion. The one from Superman, which I'll throw here in the chat room, has that kind of punchy dialogue that you would expect from like the 40s and the 50s, you know, when that kind of stuff was being thought up. So I always took it as a point of pride that Superman's half Canadian. So, well,
yeah,
I think the
original suit or newspaper Clark Kent worked for was called the Daily Star. Wasn't that a Toronto paper?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So right down to the nitty gritty of the character has those Canadian roots.
That's why he's so nice.
I've actually, we're going to go back and forth on Superman because I'm just Superman all the time right now. But I've actually got to take a tour of the house where Superman was created.
Wow.
And got to hang out with some family, Joe's niece and Jerry's wife.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was pretty fun. A couple years ago in Cleveland, they had a big Superman weekend because they had renovated the house and everything. And I got to go and also talk to the author / comic book writer, Brad Meltzer, because he was the guy who kind of spearheaded the campaign. And it was just really neat. And like getting to talk to Joanne Siegel, who was the basis of the character Lois Lane. And you could just see it in her eyes, man. You could just see that spark, that Lois spark in her eyes. It was really, really neat.
Right on. Well, I mean, I'm not going to resist the rabbit hole. So it's just as good a point as any to get into the Man of Steel. So spoiler, this section, we are not going to hold anything back. If you haven't seen the movie, you need to duck out now. Because I would hate to ruin it for you. I have a hate on for spoilers these days. So we will just let you know straight up, probably from here until damn near the end of the show, we are going to be talking about Superman and the Man of Steel movie. So you have been forewarned, good listeners. And I may even try to find some Superman music to throw in here if I can. But yeah, we'll see. So, I mean, obviously you and I have both seen it. Quick, you know, like 3 to 6 word gut reaction. What do you think?
Hated it. Just kidding. Loved it.
I think I had a heart attack. Oh my God! We
that was
had a
six
blo-
words there, right? Wait, yeah. Why? What's wrong?
I liked it as well. I thought it was very, very, very fun. Just all I can say to anybody that hasn't seen it or is humming and hawing, just you know, it's not your grandfather's Superman, which is a good thing, but don't miss it in theaters. Like you were hurting yourself if you wait until this is on home video.
This is a big screen movie.
Oh, absolutely.
Capital B, capital S.
Yeah, absolutely. Well,
no, not capital B, capital S. That stands for something else.
Total BS movie. What? Wait, big screen.
Wait,
what did you think
right,
I meant?
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I went with my sister and her boyfriend and Jocelyn, and we all had a blast. It was like Saturday night, right after my book signing, we just kind of went and grabbed a couple beers and then went to the show. And oh my God, it was just so much fun. We had perfect seats. I was surprised actually that there wasn't a bigger line. We did go to kind of a smaller theater here in the city at the early show on Saturday night. So maybe that had something to do with it. But man, oh man, it was just the scale of it was mind boggling.
Oh yeah. We had a pretty crowded theater. I went with my old friend, Corey, who, you know, anytime a new Superman comic book comes out, we call each other up. So it was appropriate I went with him. But
nice.
We went for like a steak dinner and stuff beforehand. And we were both wearing Superman T-shirts. No, actually, I think he just was. But and like people just kept coming up to us asking us if we'd seen the movie, like you know, just random people at the steakhouse we were at.
And nice.
So we took that as a good sign, and then you know just got in there, settled in, and oh, what a movie, man.
Yeah, I mean, like we were there early enough to stand outside while they were still kind of sweeping the floors and ushering a few more people out. And everybody that was coming out, I mean, they were careful because they didn't want to spoil anything for anybody waiting in line. But people were just kind of like, whoa, that was intense. Like they were just like, oh, wow. Like everybody was just kind of processing it. So it got me even more excited. Now, the thing that did bother me about my theater experience, though, was I'm sure you guys have this stuff down in the States, and that is the pre-roll before the movie. So there's a lot of, at first there's silence, but about 15 minutes before the movie starts, there's all these like, you know, interviews with people, guessing games about what other movie this actor has been in, all the stuff that's
local commercials, stuff like that.
Yeah, it's all up on the screen. Anyway, not only was there a Gillette commercial, which proceeded to show a lot of stuff from the movie that wasn't in the trailers, but there was also an interview with the actor that played Zod, and he goes into talking about the plot of the movie. Now, I put my hands over my ears and like sort of hummed to myself. So I really was the nerd going, la, 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 la. Like, I didn't want to hear any of it. But I can't believe they put that in front of the movie you were about to see.
Yeah, I heard about that. And, you know, I'm not spoiler averse at all. I actually welcome them a lot of the time.
Okay.
But I can definitely understand, like, that might be a bridge too far for me, like an officially sponsored spoiler section before the movie starts.
Yeah, like, it was a little bit much. It's a little bit much. But, I mean, I really enjoyed the movie. I've been waiting for them to do Superman right for a while. I was very excited for Superman Returns, and while I did like it when I saw it in theater, it lost its luster for me. It's not something I can really watch over and over again. It's kind of a very emo Superman for me.
Mm-hmm. See, I liked it. I always thought it was a pitch perfect, you know, homage to the Donner flicks, but it wasn't necessarily the comic book Superman or, you know, a good reboot for the character.
Yeah.
I would have been interested to see where they would go with the new Krypton stuff and him having a kid and everything in the second movie, but I like this movie better than I ever liked Returns.
So. Well, yes, absolutely. And I've watched Henry Cavill in stuff before. I actually watched The Tudors years ago when he was in that. I feel like I saw him in another movie, whatever that Greek one that he was in. Can't remember the name of it right now, but he was in another movie that was kind of very high CG stuff, like similar to 300 and whatnot. He was good in it, but the movie itself was not so shit hot. I really feel like he nailed a modern Superman. He looks the part, he acts the part. I mean, he's got that kind of boyish charm, boyish grin, but he's got some serious authority when he needs to, not just like physically, but just like verbally, to be able to say stuff. And just, he sounds like a loudspeaker. He's just, I didn't realize he had such a deep voice. And I thought at first it might've been some stuff in the movie, but he's actually, when you hear him in interviews and stuff like that, he does actually have quite a deep voice.
Yeah. Like, I had never seen him in anything. And when I heard he was cast and everything and heard he had been in other stuff that might be interesting to me, I decided not to watch any of that before I saw him as Superman. So, you know, hopefully that wouldn't taint my view of him as Superman, but he was really good. And it really sold it for me. In the trailer, they had that moment when he first brings Zod into Smallville and he's talking to him about how his parents taught him to control his powers. And now they're overtaking you all at once. And just his voice in that scene, I was like, this is Superman.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, he's ahead of you physically. He's ahead of you, like, in terms of speed. And then he's also ahead of you mentally. Like, that's what I've always liked about Superman. He's not just a brute. Like, he's got all of these powers and he uses all of them intelligently, you know, to disarm people and do stuff like that. That's one thing I liked about Smallville when it was on, is that, you know, like you'd get something where, you know, an episode where Clark would lose his strength or something would happen and he would have to figure out how to use like his heat vision or his super hearing or x-ray vision or something else to like save the day. It's not all about just punch first, ask questions later.
Yeah. However, that's something that, oh, go ahead.
You know, there's lots of punching. Lots of punching.
Lots and lots of punching.
Yeah, which is good because it needed it.
Yeah, like I would almost say at a couple points it might have been a little too much. I know, and it was probably because I had a steak and a beer beforehand, but there was one point during, I think, the fight when Superman was trying to get Black Zero to take everyone back to the Phantom Zone, that I kind of almost nodded off for a second. But just because, I mean, action scenes kind of bore me a little anyway. I mean, I'm a big story guy.
Right.
But I mean, all of them were really well done and really innovative. Like the different shots of him flying, like the one where it looked like you were kind of riding on his back and everything. The effects were phenomenal in this flick.
They were really good. It did take me a little bit to get used to the action scenes. It's unfortunately it's part of being an animator that the analytical eye is a charm for your own work, but it is really hard to turn off when you're watching other stuff. And I found that some of the scenes, probably because I have been pre-programmed by other versions of Superman, whether it's Superman Returns or Smallville or whatever, that they use different camera tricks to show speed or strength or whatever. And in this movie, they don't really slow down enough for you to catch everything, which is very realistic, but also makes it hard to watch because it looks like Superman is almost popping from frame to frame to frame as he's fighting Fiora, and I don't remember the other guy's name. What's his name?
I don't think he was named.
He wasn't named in this movie.
It was supposed to be Non from Superman 2.
Something like that. Yeah, the big guy. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I certainly got the terrible threesome there. He was just all over the place, and it just it was a little static at first, like kind of hard to track. But then you started to get kind of used to it because there would be some patterns, and everybody else would be doing it too. And I found that was very, very cool. I enjoyed the flying sequence too, like when he first realized, you know, he could fly.
That did my heart good, especially when he smiled.
Yeah,
when he got over the fear and the concentration, he was like, okay.
Yeah.
I can get into flying.
This is going to be something else. Yeah. The one thing I did find about that sequence though, when he's, you know, talking to Jor-El and getting the kind of the lay of the land and hearing about all of his heritage, I found it moved kind of fast. And I think it's because they really avoided doing like the discovering your powers montage, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm glad they did, but it felt like all of a sudden 1 minute he's talking to Jor-El, and the next minute he's in a red and blue cape, and there's red suit with the blue suit with the red cape, and you're just kind of like, what? No one even mentioned the suit; they just kind of pointed at it.
So you missed the 50-minute montage of Clark Kent over 7 years getting knowledge from Jor-El in the fortress from Superman 1.
No. Was that? Did I miss that in the movie? Am I?
No, I'm just joking
about the other one.
No, I was joking about the other one.
Yeah, okay.
I was joking. Yeah, it was pretty much instantaneous.
Yeah, I did go to the bathroom in a slow section in and around that point. So, see the aforementioned beers before the show. I did miss a little there, but I wasn't gone that long, so I felt like it was a little bit fast. But I mean, that's okay. Like not that I wanted to have them to rehash everything, because they did a really good job of telling the same old story that really everybody knows, you know, in a new kind of way, you know, with some flashbacks and, you know, some of the guilt that he feels and, you know, some of the battles that he had with like his parents and whether or not he should or shouldn't help people. I mean, Pa Kent was a different cat in this than I was expecting.
Oh, definitely. Like, as far as major changes they made, Jenny Olsen / Jimmy Olsen is still kind of up in the air as to whether they've officially replaced Jimmy Olsen. But I would say Pa Kent is probably the most different. Just because it really seemed in this one, Jor-El was more the one who encouraged him to do good in the world, where Pa Kent just wanted him to kind of hide his powers. And actually, the only big complaint I had with the movie was Pa Kent's death scene with
the tornado. Mm-hmm.
Like, it's weird because, you know, so much hinged on that plot point, you know, both within the plot and thematically and for the character. And I think that plot point in that place and everything hanging off of it worked really well. And that event, I wouldn't want them to change what that event was, how it happened. I just, for some reason, the way they did it, it just didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
if they had made different choices while they were planning that scene, it could have played really, really well.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was the right idea, but probably the wrong execution.
Mm-hmm.
Wrong execution. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, well, I mean, while we're on some things that we actually didn't like about the movie, because Dave mentioned, King Argyle here in the chat room, that he's still getting very mixed reviews. People either love it or they hate it. Some of the things that fell short for me were the beginning of the movie, and you do get used to it, slash maybe they don't do it so much later on, but the shaky cam, like the handy cam thing, drove me crazy.
Really?
Like, oh, God, I just wanted a good, clean look at Superman or, you know, him do it. Like, I just wanted something. But every time you had a close-up or something, the camera was just handheld. And it's fine if you got somebody that doesn't have the shakes, but it was all over the place. And I'm contemplating, I've got friends that want to go see it. And I mean, I will go see it again. And they're, you know, like we've been discussing, you know, IMAX 3D, you know, like, what do we want to go to see? And I'm okay with anything because I went to go see it in a non-3D, just kind of regular 2D theater, not 2D, but like non-3D theater.
And
usually I go see movies for the first time that way. And if they're really good and other friends want to see them in 3D, then sure, I'll go. So IMAX 3D might be where I go for that. And that shaky cam is going to be nuts at that size.
Well, from what I've heard, the 3D conversion isn't much to write home about. It's basically a lot of particle effects in the opening Krypton sequence and the battle for Metropolis.
Yeah.
And that's about the extent of it. And then it's just basic separation.
Yeah.
But yeah, the shaking cam was there quite a bit. And if that bothers you, if you get motion sickness from it, or if you just don't like it, I can definitely understand having that complaint. I am not that guy. But I can definitely see having that complaint.
Yeah. What were some of the other bones that you had?
I really didn't have too much, really. I mean, like I said, some of the action sequences were a little excessive. But I think my biggest bone is it feels a lot like people are just trying to find issues with this movie. Like they're pointing out things anyone who went in and liked it sees as a strength and pointing at it as a weakness. But actually, you know, I want to say this before I forget about it. One thing I thought was really interesting as far as the camera work was that it was kind of like Bizarro Zack Snyder directed it. But because they were all the enemies and everything were moving at super speed, where he usually has that ramp effect where people are fighting and then they slow it down. It was like they were moving really fast, but when they started moving at normal speed, it slowed down. So it was kind of like a weird twist on what his signature shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good point too. Because I mean, you know, 300. I mean, people rush into battle and everything slows down to a crawl. Mm-hmm. And that's how they used to show the super speed effect in Smallville. Was that rather than have him blur by all the time, they would slow everything down to a crawl with like bullet time sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And then Clark would move through the scene kind of like a regular person, but obviously everybody would assume that he's going super fast. I liked some of the super speed scenes and stuff. I liked that there wasn't really one thing that Superman used all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like he was constantly switching between kind of like the three main: flying, super strength, I guess super speed flying kind of comes together, I guess. But he was switching between all of those in addition to his heat vision. And he would be using them in combination. You know, like I thought that was really cool. There was a bit there at the end when he has to face off, you know, one-on-one against Zod that really felt like an advertisement for Injustice, Gods Among Us, the video game. Like it was all of a sudden like, everybody in the scene disappeared and you're just looking at this huge dust field and Superman and Zod kind of doing like the OK Corral square off. And it's like, wow, do I press A, B to jump? Like what, you know?
Finish him.
Yeah, exactly. It really did kind of feel staged like that. And I was like, oh, and it could be just because I've seen the game and Jocelyn has been talking about it. So, I mean, like, it could be that I just have it on the brain that I recognize that kind of stuff. And I thought that was kind of a pain in the ass. But my biggest beef, which is unfortunate because I really enjoy the relationship in most renditions of Superman, and that is that I didn't believe for a second that Superman and Lois Lane had any kind of real connection or attraction to one another.
Yeah, there definitely wasn't like you got in Lois and Clark or Superman the movie, that the first time they meet, they're soulmates.
Mm-hmm.
I mean that was even a plot point in Lois and Clark for a while, stupid.
Mm-hmm.
But you didn't really get that sense, but you definitely got the sense that they were friendly toward each other, and it could grow into that, I thought.
Yes. I felt like the kiss was like misplaced. Like it just.
Well, see, I don't think that kiss was really a romantic kiss at all. I think that was a post-traumatic stress disorder. We just survived almost the end of the world. Let's kiss each other.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was really meant to be romantic. I think it was more just relief and having a human moment kind of thing.
Yeah, I guess. I liked Amy Adams as Lois. I was surprised.
Yeah.
You know, like I
her and her Nikon.
Yeah, yeah. Jeez. Yeah, I was impressed. You know, like I got the reporter thing. I loved part of the, you know, whole the same old story in a new way. I love that she figures out that he's Clark in like 45 minutes.
Oh, yeah. I'm really interested to see how that goes. I was really actually kind of happy with that because, you know, in a serialized storytelling medium like a TV show or a cartoon or comic books, you know, the whole love triangle made of two thing kind of works, and you can get some good stories out of that, some good drama. But in a movie, you're supposed to hit the most important parts of these characters' lives, and there's... you know, Superman, he's a big character, big things happen to him, and you really can't be, just jerking around, having Lois almost walking in on him when he's changing in the storage room for three movies and then revealing the third movie or whatever. So I'm just glad they got it out of the way. And I grew up with Lois and Clark getting engaged and getting married and being married for like, 15, 16, 17 years. So it doesn't seem unusual to me to have Lois know.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, like I like the idea. I think it creates a new dynamic because then there's all these little in jokes, you know, where, you know, she's like, you know, they're talking in mixed company and mm-hmm. she asks him to go pick up something at the copiers and he's like, yeah, I'll get to it. And she's like, no, it has to be. And he's looking at her like, no, I'll be fast. You know, wink, wink, you know.
Yeah, there was one right at the end of the movie when she says, "Welcome to the planet."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, stuff like that. I appreciate the humor and that kind of thing. I wasn't really keen on. They didn't do a whole lot to him for the whole Clark Kent disguise thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like he didn't even comb his hair differently.
See, and you know, I think that was one of my favorite parts of the movie was like the narration along with that Clark Kent reveal.
Mm.
And I mean, it's not a super convincing disguise. It never is.
No.
And the filmmakers have actually kind of hinted that more people at the planet than just Lois will know. Like Perry will probably know in the second movie.
Yeah.
Well, which I think is a very cool dynamic.
Well, it's also realistic. I mean, you're talking about Superman in a world of Predator drones and, you know, Harrier jets and Twitter. Yeah, exactly. Like, all this kind of stuff. I mean, it would be very, very difficult to keep everybody in the dark, you know? And
I mean, obviously the whole governmental aspect of it, you're completely 100% right. I would say with the social media stuff, though, that, you know, there are people out there who have secret lives that nobody knows about. And I mean, they don't put on much more of a disguise than Clark, you know. And, you know, this is just the example that popped into my head. But, you know, say a married father of three who goes out to a gay club in the evening because he hasn't got to terms with himself yet.
Right.
You know, and it doesn't pop out there just because no one's paying attention. Everyone's so concerned with themselves that, you know, they don't necessarily, oh, that guy with the glasses kind of looks like Superman. Oh, wait a second. I have a doctor's appointment at 3.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if it would really stick out to anyone. I could definitely see them, you know, maybe using that as a plot point in the future, though, because I would really love to see in a movie Superman's secret identity seriously at risk. So that could be a cool plot point in a future movie.
Yeah, and I think that there would be some people that may eventually figure out who he is by him, you know, being unable to resist saving them, but not being able to change into the costume. And but at the same time, like, their gratitude would be just also their willingness to keep it a secret, you know, like,
yeah, kind of a Spider-Man 2 scenario where they're so thankful that they don't even care.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I would hope if they went in that direction, that they wouldn't lose the fun ways that Clark Kent has to help out, you know, without anyone noticing. Because that's always been some of my favorite stuff they've done with you know, the whole secret identity thing, is him having to kind of like duck his glasses down and do some heat vision behind someone without them noticing.
Mm-hmm. Well, geez, good luck not noticing the heat vision in this movie.
Oh, yeah. it's visible. It's basically like two little suns in his eyes.
Yeah, oh my God. Well, and like the veins around his eyes all light up red. Like, it looks menacing. A lot of times in the movie when he uses it, he screams. Like, it has that moment. Do you remember the animated opening from DC Universe Online when Superman has to come down and basically beat the crap out of, I think it's not Captain Marvel, it's somebody else, the Black Adam maybe?
Yeah, it was Black Adam.
Yeah,
I remember that.
And he just screams at him and just shoots him in the chest with his heat vision. It's visceral. Like, I mean, I like that kind of stuff. And I loved all of that Superman in this movie, he gets angry. He punches people. I mean, they're Kryptonians most of the time, but he beats the living snot out of Zod. And I'm pretty sure he ends up fighting Fiora and wins most of that battle. He loses it first, but I think the second round he gets the best of her. Speaking of badass, she is badass in this movie.
Oh, definitely.
Oh,
definitely.
Man. Jocelyn commented on that before even I had the chance to, when we were having nachos after the film, is that she loved how, like, you know, she's Kryptonian. She knows she's got superpowers and she's going to use them with like reckless abandon, like no holds barred. You know, people in this movie die. You know, Superman doesn't save everybody. Yeah. I like the weight that all of that kind of had.
You know who else was really badass in the movie was that army general, the guy for what is it, CSI or Law and Order or something?
Oh,
like that.
Special Victims Unit.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
I don't remember his name, but he's good too.
He was completely badass, especially in relation to Feyora, like the scenes that they had where like he. Both times she came at him and he knew that she was, you know, as powerful as Superman. And I think at one point he even went at her with just a knife. He was like, okay, well, if I'm going to die, I'm going to go out fighting.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Superman, I think, sweeps in at the last second there or something like that. Yeah. And then they crash into the IHOP.
Yeah. But then I think he sacrificed himself, to get the, thing into the ship, right?
To create the singularity, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he outsmarted her. That's because that's how he had to beat her. I feel like there was a huge nod to like Dollhouse and Battlestar Galactica. Like a lot of the extras or the bit parts in this film were like people that you've seen and loved in many a sci-fi genre before.
This was a very sci-fi movie.
It was like high sci-fi, mm-hmm. like really kind of stretching, you know, like there's flying dragonfly, dragon lizard things on Krypton. And
if you're not super tied into the Superman mythos, you might not get this, but there was a Thangarian snare beast on Krypton, which I was so happy about, because that was one of the creatures that Superman had in his zoo in the Fortress of Solitude in the 50s and 60s.
Oh, nice.
I was so glad to see it. There were tons of little homages. Like,
was that like the big cow thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right. I figured that's what it was. But yeah, because I'm just thinking there was really only two creatures that I remember seeing. One was the flying one, and the other one was like the rhinoceros dinosaur looking thing. Mm-hmm. It was pretty big. Yeah. No, that's because you forget, like, I mean, all of our other renditions of Krypton, it's always been like, you know, this crystalline planet with like no life on it. So
movie renditions.
Yeah. Well, okay. Yes. Sorry. Movie renditions.
Like,
yeah.
That's only actually ever been canon in the comics for about 3 or 4 years back before they did the new 52 thing. After Infinite Crisis, Geoff Johns took over the Superman books and they kind of rebooted it to look a little more like the movies,
right?
Because Superman Returns was coming out. So they thought that, you know, they'd kind of tie it back into that, I guess.
Yeah.
But that's really actually the only time it's been like that in the comics. But I understand a lot of people know the movies, the TV show, etc.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask you right now, because I have to confess, I don't read many comic books. I read the odd Batman book or more so graphic novel or like trades where they've collected a bunch of stuff where I can read like all, you know, 10 or 12 issues at once. But mm-hmm. I've been wanting to, and because I like Superman and I like those kind of comics, but I find that sometimes I'll return to it and it's like the one issue that I pick up and it's like his dog saves the day. I'm just like, okay, while I appreciate that it is a comic and that we can stretch our imaginations, that kind of stuff just leaves me really disappointed. So what...
Don't bad talk crypto around me, man.
Oh, you're a crypto fan?
oh, I love crypto.
I think it's funny. And I think it's funny when you've got like a mm-hmm. DC directed DVD release and Batman and Superman are talking about his dog and Batman is just bad mouth of the dog and Superman's like, hey, watch it. This is my dog. Like that I find funny. But when the dog actually plays a role in saving Superman's life because it's got superpowers, I find that it's not like it's fun, but it's not what I'm looking for in a comic, I guess. So
real quick before you ask your question, I will give you a story right now that will change your mind on crypto. Read the original Death of Superman from back in the 50s or 60s. It was a three-part imaginary story. Will change your view on crypto. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, speaking of books to recommend, I want to know what book should I try to pick up now and read? Because the new 52 has got several.
Well, I would say actually, you know, I haven't been keeping up with the new 52 month to month. I kind of save up the issues and then read them all in one go.
Okay.
But if you like this movie, I would suggest you pick up a trade. And it should be pretty cheap because it's been out for years. So there's probably a ton of old copies, super cheap. It's called Superman Exile.
Okay.
And basically what it is, it's a story from the 80s. And you might have heard this a bit in the press this week. Well, everyone's been talking about, you know, the death of Zod and everything. But Superman goes to a pocket universe where Zod, Feora, and, what's his name? I think Jack Sir. I can't remember exactly. But he's the third Kryptonian villain or the Phantom Zone villain in the comics. They basically destroy the Earth. Wow. They destroy every life on Earth, and Superman decides he has to take it into his own hands and kill them because they say they're going to go to his Earth next, and he tried to stop them, and he couldn't stop them. So he kills them, and then he decides that he can't be Superman anymore, and he goes out into space, and it's a lot of him trying to deal with that as well as becoming an intergalactic hero at the same time. So if you liked... what I think this movie probably set up thematically for the second movie, and you want to see a story like what I think will be in the second movie, I would recommend Superman Exile.
Oh, cool. I'll have to look into that. I do remember seeing Superman fighting Zod in something more recent than the 80s. I don't remember what sequence or what book it might have been from.
There's been a few different ones. For Tomorrow comes to mind, but actually another one I would recommend, especially if you like the way they portrayed Krypton in this movie, because I think they took a lot of like the whole caste system where everyone is raised to be, you know, a specific job type on mm-hmm. Krypton. And kind of, I think the character of Zod a bit too. It's called World of New Krypton. It was a 12-issue miniseries that came out probably about a year before they did New 52.
Oh, right.
It's in trade now. And basically what happens, you know, the bottle city of Kandor?
Right.
Superman figures out a way to enlarge it. They kind of terraform and build a planet on the other side of the sun. And Superman goes there with them to live, you know, as a Kryptonian citizen. I think he's there a year, but he works under General Zod because Zod's one of the higher ups. So he decides to, you know, get Superman under his thumb. But it was actually the first Superman story, besides maybe Superman 2, that I really liked Zod in.
Wow.
So I think they took a lot of inspiration both for Krypton and for Zod from that book. So I'd recommend that one as well.
Cool. Well, I'll have to check those out. I did pick up like the original like number 52. I think it was just the Superman title, number one from the New 52. I've heard Action Comics seem like they look like they're pretty good, but it's I find it hard to tell because there's like three or four different versions of Superman in the New 52, and it's just like I just want a Superman book. Apparently, though, Justice League in the New 52 has been pretty good.
The Superman book in New 52, I really liked it because it reminded me of Bronze Age Superman, but a lot of people didn't like it, and it kind of fell to the wayside a little bit. But Action actually is really, really, really good, and it kind of tells you the origin story, yet again, in another new and different way, more different than the movie.
Oh, cool. Well, maybe that'll be the one that I check out. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, I would suggest the first trade back in Action. That'll give you a good idea if you're going to like it or not, and then pick up the rest of Grant Morrison's run.
Yeah. You do. Cool. Right on. Well, thanks for the recommends, man. I'll definitely look into those. I guess we get time for, you know, a couple final thoughts on Man of Steel. Anything that you want to point out or talk about that we haven't covered already?
Okay, one thing I thought was really, really interesting was that Zod and Jor-El were basically after the same thing. They were both trying to remake Krypton in their image. Those are very varying images, and I think, you know, most of the audience, yeah, we're on the side of Jor-El because he seems to want to do something good instead of this weird clone facility thing that Krypton's been doing for so long. But I thought it was interesting that they're both working to the same goal, and you know, technically you could say they're both a little in the wrong. But I just thought that was an interesting dynamic, and it made sense, you know, they were such adversaries on Krypton because of that.
Yeah,
they both
I mean,
had their own ideas about what was best for the future of Krypton.
Yeah, I mean, one was essentially genocide, and the other was, well, we'll be there and we'll do the same things, but we intend to, like, help the humans adapt, was kind of like Jor-El's line, I think is what he said. And I was like, I was a little surprised at that. One of the things that I thought I was going to miss immensely, but I didn't, was a nod to the John Williams score. I mean, everybody loves it. I mean, it really speaks Superman to so many people. But I mean, Hans Zimmer is obviously very good at what he does, and I really did enjoy the score. It goes along with how action-packed the movie is. Like, there's no really romantic theme that kind of flutes along as you're soaring around. It's all very heavily snare-drummed and upbeat, fast-paced, and I really like the score. I got a copy for myself here to listen at home. It does get a little repetitive in some of the faster sequences. Like, it kind of goes on and on. I find I've been humming it for every once in a while in my head since I saw the movie. And it just kind of goes to show, like, I feel like there's a repetitive theme in there that you're hearing over and over again. I did really like the sound design in the movie too. You know, like, I mean, you hear Superman breaking the sound barrier and, you know, the gravity, whatever the terraform technology was that the Kryptonians were using on Earth was visceral as far as the sound was concerned. Like, I mean, I felt it in my chest when the gravity thing was reversing, and it was like, whoa, this is intense stuff. And those are some of my final thoughts. I mean, you've already mentioned that, you know, Zod has to be stopped. And I think that's where a point where people are really split. And I think that's why people... they're throwing their arms up when Zod dies. And it's because they don't think that Superman should be or is able to kill anybody. And I think that, granted, it's obviously something that he struggles with even in that moment. But for me, it's the weight of it. It's not that he's just killing a bad guy. He is killing the last known survivor of his home planet. Like, this is it. This is the last chance that he has to talk to somebody about Krypton and what it was really like. And he has to kill him before he kills an innocent family. Like, I just, that to me was important, and it makes Superman a threat as a hero. It means that he is, even though it's going to be his absolute last resort. It means that he is going to be capable of being a badass when you need him to be. And I think for me, that was why it worked so well, because in a modern Superman, like, he has to be able to kick ass. He can't just be a Boy Scout all the time.
Yeah, like I'm not really torn. I'm kind of surprised at my reaction, because if you had told me a year ago that I was going to watch a Superman movie where Superman killed somebody, I would call you crazy. I'd break your neck. But no, I thought it was really well done. And I think you're right about, you know, the fact of being the last Kryptonian he could contact being part of that anguish. But I think an equal part, and maybe even a little more powerful, is that Zod made Superman kill him. Because Zod had nothing left. Like he said, Superman took his soul. He took his entire reason for being. So Zod was never going to stop until everything Superman cared about, including Earth, was completely destroyed. And it was basically suicide by cop. He knew he had nothing left to live for. He knew he wanted to die, but he was going to do as much damage before he could. He was going to do damage until Superman took him out himself, just to kind of stick the knife in Jor-El's side a little bit by corrupting his son. But I don't think it's going to be a corrupting influence. I think what it is, it's a case of show, don't tell, and they've shown why Superman has the no-kill rule instead of just taking it for granted that he has the no-kill rule. I think that's, and I think, you know, in the second movie, it's going to be a major, major thing that they're going to address. This, him killing Zod, him not being complicit, but being involved in the destruction of Metropolis, and how he kind of deals with that now, how he, you know, deals with having that reputation.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I mean, it puts the new weight of like the loneliness that has that is part of the Clark Kent Superman character. Like, it's not just that he has been left alone. It's that he's in part responsible.
Yeah.
You know, for why, you know, he's alone. Because I mean, everybody else that was on that ship with Zod all had to be part of that singularity too. Like, he couldn't even save another follower of Zod who, I mean, like, he doesn't know. He never had a chance to talk to anybody to see whether they'd be willing to follow him instead of Zod. You know, like, so, well, it all just happened so fast.
With them, do you think, I don't know if they're dead or not. I think they're pretty much just in the Phantom Zone, aren't they?
Maybe that's what it was.
So I mean, they could possibly come back.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true,
we'll see. But as far as he knows, and he has no way to access the Phantom Zone because the thing that transported people to the Phantom Zone took itself with it.
Yeah, yeah. The whole thing went into the end of the singularity. Yeah, no, I kind of, there's a good part of me that it really enjoyed the fact that he had a real challenge and that, you know, he was up against other people with superpowers and like it made sense. But another part of me is looking for an old fashioned, you know, Lex Luthor, Superman, you know, bank robbery kind of plot for a movie. It would have to be, you know, well written and well executed. But I like the idea of, you know, Superman being the only superhero in a story, and having those kind of things happen. So, but I guess that's it for me. I mean, I highly recommend everybody go see this movie. I really enjoyed it. You will not be sorry. At the very least, it is extremely entertaining and it is very fun for a summer blockbuster movie. I'm assuming, Bill, you also have the same recommendation.
I thought it was super. And I'll leave it at that.
Oh boy. I was trying to avoid it the whole time. Leave it to Bill to bring it home.
Couldn't help it.
Yeah. Well, we've gone a little bit over time here, so I'm just going to have to skip right ahead to the end of the show, where I thank everybody for coming out and watching or listening to the Citadel Cafe live here on Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on joelduggan.com/live. Music for the Citadel Cafe was composed by Kevin MacLeod, and of course, you can catch the podcast on demand via iTunes and our website, thecitadelcafe.com. You can find us by name on all your favorite social networks, and you can find me by name at joelduggan.com, and you will find links there to everything that I am up to on the internet. Bill, where can people find you online?
They can find my work at meeksmixedmedia.com. Also, I have a YouTube channel. I don't plug that enough. youtube.com/meeksmixedmedia. And I also do a podcast about Once Upon a Time, and you can find that at greetingsfromstorybrook.com, and find me on Twitter at Bill Meeks.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to The Citadel Cafe, where we are faster than a speeding bullet, easy and cheap, but you can only pick two. Bill, that was super fun, man. Sorry to have to skip over the picks there at the end, but
No big.
It's a 10:15 now, so I'm actually gonna go make dinner.
Yeah, I actually have to do another podcast about Man of Steel.
Oh man, did I bite into some time? Are you late?
No, only by about 2 minutes. They're really good friends, so
okay.
It doesn't matter as much. Basically, what we did is we recorded about 20 minutes last Wednesday.
Oh.
Talking about the movie, and now Fine. We're going to record 20 minutes this week after having seen the movie.
Wow. So, where can I get that?
It'll be my so-called 8bitlife.com. I'm also going to be on the Collection DX video podcast. I think they're a podcast now, too. But that's at CollectionDX.com. I'm going to be on that tomorrow night talking about the movies, too.
Nice.
So.
Wow, you're going to be all Man of Steel'd out.
Dude, the thing is, you know, once my friend Corey left, I didn't have anybody to talk to about the movie.
Oh, there you go.
So this gives me a good outlet for it.